Yo, what's the deal, baby? This your boy, Uncle Luke, formerly of the 2 Live Crew. You are listening to Pass It Down with Mike Silver and Natalie Silver. Natalie is the most beautiful young lady in this deal right here. Mike doesn't look so good, even though they're dad and daughter. It's the big show, baby.
Technological challenges be damned. We are super pumped to welcome Kyle Rudolph to the Pass It Down podcast. Natalie, Kyle Rudolph is one of my favorite dudes in the league. He's kind of quietly one of the better players in the league, but doesn't always get that kind of love, doesn't beat his chest. But, you know, I think people who know football know how good he is. And I would like to tell you that he's a derelict off the field, but he's also been nominated the last 3 years for the Walter Payton Man of the Year Award. So he's obviously doing some very, very good things for society. Other than his association with me, he seems to be beyond reproach.
So I appreciate that.
So, Kyle, I know that next week the football world is going to kick back up again, even though the NFL and Players Association have agreed to testing protocol finally. They're also proceeding with the season, beginning with training camps, pretty much full speed ahead. So we wanted to talk to you about how you're feeling about this. I know you have young kids and a wife. Are you stressed?
You know, obviously over the last few months, there's been so much uncertainty, and this pandemic has caused a lot of stress on people. And, you know, for me, you know, especially with the encouraging news that has come out of Major League Soccer, Major League Baseball, the NBA, the NHL, you know, they just did a huge round of testing since they've all been back and practicing. And I think they ended up coming out with like 0.05% of the tests came back positive. So, you know, it just shows that, you know, we can get back to work, we can get back to practice, and, you know, there's still a way to keep this under control. So I'm extremely excited to get back to work. I'm ready to get back to football. I think football is a great way for not only our community here in Minnesota, but for our country as a whole to come together through difficult times that we've been going through dealing with this pandemic for the last few months.
Do you, I mean, football's such a like close contact game. So I guess I worry about asymptomatic, false positives, false negatives, and then like an outbreak. So I guess what's your stress level if the testing is all followed and everything goes the way it's supposed to? Do you worry that all of a sudden there could be like 20 people on one team testing positive?
You know, the biggest thing that I worry about is, you know, what happens when, you know, for example, our quarterback coach goes back home and he's spending time with his family, and his child came home from school, you know, asymptomatic, they pass it along, and then all of a sudden it wipes out our quarterback room. You know, or I propose the example of, you know, an offensive lineman gets it. Now, all of a sudden, he's passed it to a couple starting offensive linemen, and now we're wiped out. You know, we have 3 starting offensive linemen that can't play. So my biggest fear is what would happen if it were to wipe out a whole position group. You know, it's,
yeah,
we're not like the NBA. We're not like the NHL. You know, we can't just like move me to right tackle and say, oh, well, we're going to play small this week. We're not going to, you know, in the NBA world, we're not going to use a big, we're going to play small ball. We can't do that. So that would be my biggest fear of, you know, what would happen if a whole position group were to get wiped out at the same time. But in terms of like playing our game and contracting the virus, I don't worry about that. You know, I feel like if the NBA guys are out there and they're playing, you know, they're just as close of contact as we are, and they're rubbing up against each other, and, you know, sweat droplets are coming from one player to another. And NHL is the same way. You know, that's a very physical, very contact sport, and they're indoors all the time. So, you know, for us, the majority of the time, obviously at US Bank Stadium, we're inside. But, you know, during training camp and during practice, we can be outside all the time. So I don't worry about that side of it. My biggest fear, like I said, would be, you know, what would happen in an instance where an entire position group were to get wiped out.
And if one of your teammates, like, went out and, you know, hit the bars and acted irresponsibly and then an outbreak happened, like, would that cause an issue in the locker room, you think?
I think it would, and I think that's one of the biggest things and one of the most important parts that we'll have to learn when we get back, that this year is going to be unlike any other. And, you know, quite honestly, for myself, you know, when I'm at the facility and it's time to go home, you know, back to the house with my wife, with my kids, but that's not the case. You think about so many guys in our league, you know, they're 21, 22, 23 years old. They have freedom for the first time. They're on their own for the first time. They've got a little bit of money for the first time. And to tell them, like, hey, look, yeah, I know you got a little bit of money in your pocket now. You got some freedom now, but we need you to stay home because if you were to, you know, catch COVID, bring it back to the facility, you know, you could cost us games. So I think that'll be the biggest thing is just explaining to the young guys that, hey, look, this is uncharted territory for all of us. And as Peter King wrote in his column yesterday, I talked to Peter a little bit after his tour of our facility, and Peter said, he's like, I literally felt like I could eat off every surface in your facility. It was that clean. and that, so that's a,
Hey, Kyle, let me tell you something. After that tour, I felt like I could eat off every surface in your facility.
That sounds just like him. And, you know, so like, I'm not worried about the facility. It's what happens at 4:30, 5 p.m. Everybody goes back home. You go back to your family, or, you know, you go back and potentially go out to eat. Like you said, go out in a social environment. So that's where we'll really have to be careful because, you know, they're doing all the appropriate measures to make sure the facility's safe. So we have to make sure that we're safe when we go home.
So for the record, I worked with Peter at Sports Illustrated for years, and I actually do that imitation for him, and he's a fan.
That was so very good.
Thank you. I've had years of practice. And, you know, I just – it's been the weirdest offseason ever, for sure, and not just because of football, but we're going through something crazy. But, I mean, did you feel more stress this offseason or – last off season, because last off season there was all the contract drama where, you know, there was talk that they wanted you to restructure, possibly take less. There were trade rumors, and you know how I felt about it. I felt like that was a crazy thing for them to ponder, given your productivity and you know what you mean in the locker room, but. You know, as the guy experiencing it, was that a stressful state of affairs?
I would say this offseason has been more stressful than last just because, you know, like you said, almost everything that happened last year was just rumors and speculation on the outside. You know, not once did I think throughout the course of last offseason that I wouldn't remain a Minnesota Viking, and I wouldn't be a Minnesota Viking for more years to come. To whereas this year, just when you think you kind of have things figured out and you're getting into this new normal that we're in, things are constantly changing. And, you know, I think back to April when kind of the world stopped turning, everything shut down. All the professional sports leagues were postponed. You know, it was, okay, let's, you know, that whole, like, let's 2 weeks social distancing and let's see where we're at. And, you know, never would I have imagined that back in March and April, this would be something that come September, we still wouldn't be able to have fans in the stands. We still wouldn't be back to a certain sense of normalcy in the world. So I think just the unknown of this pandemic and the unknown of this virus has been way more stressful than, you know, what I was dealing with last year. Because like I said, what I was dealing with last year was really out of my control in terms of contract negotiations. I was able to just go to work every day and focus on becoming a better football player and making sure that when the season did start last year and I was in a Vikings uniform, I was ready to go.
I mean, when I saw the Patriot rumors last year, I was like, okay, Gronk's gone. But then I was like, I wonder if Adam Thielen's going to weigh in, given that he famously once told Bill Belichick to shut the F up on the sidelines, which makes me love Adam Thielen, by the way. Did you guys talk about that at all?
Yeah, I think at one point, because, you know, my locker, Kirk, or Adam were all right there next to each other, and you know, we're just like, Adam, what were you thinking? He goes, I don't know. It just kind of happened. I wasn't really thinking. We're like, you just told arguably the best football coach in the history of our game to shut the F up.
Oh, I love it. I'm glad you're not a Patriot, put it that way, though. I would have, you know, it would have been really interesting to see you play with Tom Brady, but I think being the Vikings tight end is where you belong.
It is.
Yeah, I've been studying up my football, the X's and O's, and I think I've got it down what a tight end does. Correct me if I'm wrong. You not only block, but you also catch. Am I right?
sometimes. Unfortunately, last year I did a lot more blocking than catching. But we're going to work on that this year, and hopefully I get back to a more normal tight end distribution of blocking and catching.
Yeah, Kyle, they tend to like remember that he's on the team when they get near the end zone, and then they're like, oh, this guy's got an incredible ability to leap up and catch the ball. Now, you interviewed a tight end earlier on this podcast who played many years for the Vikings, Steve Jordan.
Oh, yeah, Steve Jordan. Yeah. And I also kind of know another tight end, Chris Cooley, but but it's interesting because Steve Jordan, when I talked to him, he was so sophisticated and cerebral and talking about the most topical and important topics right now with such eloquence, and it was kind of mind-blowing. And then there's Chris Cooley. Well, I mean, I'm...
I know, Chris.
You got to tell Kyle your Chris Cooley story. So tell Kyle your familiarity.
I've never really met Chris Cooley, but this past fall or winter, I guess, I was doing a lot of transcribing for my dad. And so he would just send me files and I'd transcribe them, do my thing. And so one day he sends me a file. It's titled Chris Cooley.
And I'd flown back east for like a week to do some stuff. And the first night I flew to Dulles and stayed at Cooley's house. And we have a sordid history of like prank calling people, and it all involves alcohol.
We've got to get him on the podcast.
Yeah. And so at one point we're like a few beers in, and I'm asking him like he's describing a lot of really, you know, interesting stuff, like McVay and Kyle Shanahan and that offense and how it all fits together. I think we were watching a Vikings game. I think it was a Monday, maybe a Sunday night Vikings game. I want to say, and maybe did you guys play the Cowboys Sunday
yes.
night? Maybe?
Yep. Yep.
Yeah. I don't remember that.
Yeah. So we're like watching that game. We're having beers. And at one point I get up to pee, and I guess I just left my phone there. And didn't think much of it. So anyway, go ahead.
Yeah. So I'm transcribing, and then, you know, he's like, all right, dude, like, I got to take a piss. You hear him like shuffle up or whatever. And then you kind of hear the phone like slide across the table closer to Chris, and he picks it up. And then you just hear, like, you know, you're peeing for what? Maybe 2 minutes?
I mean,
and the
probably.
The entire time, you know, it's just like, I'm Mike Silver, and I like balls. I like balls in my mouth. I love juggling balls with my tongue. Dude, nonstop. It was so funny. I obviously made a clip of it and sent it to my brother, my cousin.
Hilarious.
I know.
And I didn't know. That's how I found out too. I was like, oh, cool.
I'm a big fan of Chris. Yeah.
Probably quite the surprise to you, Natalie, as you just think you're transcribing your dad's work.
I mean, I will say this. Like, I do have an affinity for tight ends for some reason. And a lot of you guys are a little sick. And maybe Cooley's an extreme example. And Brent Celek and I were tight. But, like, Ertz is sick, Hooper is sick, Kittle, I don't know Gronk that well, but I mean, he certainly seems to be, you know, to have a gene that's in that family. Yeah. Kelsey, who do you think who are the truly, you know, most off-center tight ends that you know as humans? You can include yourself.
Yeah, I mean, you hit the list there. It's and the tight end position is one, you know, and I say this all the time about, you know, young players that come into the league. And, you know, I've been so fortunate throughout my 10 years in the league, you know, whether it's offensive line seems to be this way as well. But, you know, you get your high draft pick pass rushers, receivers, DBs, quarterbacks, certainly. And, you know, tight ends always seem to come in and, you know, you have easy rookies. They're always good guys. They're fun to be around. So it's, you know, the tight end position is just kind of, again, I will put it right there with offensive line where it's almost just like a bunch of good old boys. Like, you know, we like to have a good time, drink some beers, hang out. We love being around the fellows, whether it's in the meeting room, out on the practice field. But you went down a list of guys. I mean, what the rampage that Travis has been on for the last couple of years, you know, obviously highlighted by his play on the field, but then, you know, a reality dating show, the, you know, chugging beers in the Super Bowl parade. Obviously, Gronk's had his fair share, you know, denting the Super Bowl trophy with a baseball. So, yeah, it's there's just a lot of good guys across the league in our position. And, you know, to me, I love studying them. I love watching them on tape. And it's fun to study those guys and learn from them.
Is there one guy right now that you think is just at an insane level that you're kind of, when you watch on film right now, you're just kind of like, whoa.
From a pass game production standpoint, what Travis, Zach Ertz, and George Kittle have done the last couple of years is just insane. I mean, the numbers that these guys are putting up, you know, with Travis, the first tight end in NFL history to go 4 1,000-yard seasons in a row. And you think of all the great tight ends that have played our game, especially as of late. Then you go to Ertz and his, you know, shattering the record last two years ago for all time or receptions in a season. George breaks the yards record. So it's just, you know, those guys are putting up insane numbers in the past game.
So I was at the Minnesota Miracle 2 years ago. Insane. Nally, that was the Vikings and the Saints. The Saints looked like they pulled out a great victory. And then Case Keenum threw a pass to Stephon Diggs. Two Saints players collided, and it was one of the most epic plays in history. The Vikings went on the last play. The next year, I was at the NFC Championship game in New Orleans when the Saints were about to go to the Super Bowl. They did not call a pass interference penalty on the Rams. That was obvious. Not only did the Saints lose, but they changed the rule after the season to allow review of offensive and defensive pass interference calls and no calls. And we talked about VAR last week with Brandon Chastain. I was also not a fan of that replay intrusion. And then last year, the Vikings went to New Orleans to play the Saints in the playoffs. And it all came down in overtime to a pass to the corner to Kyle. And I mean, Kyle's athleticism is ridiculous. And his hands, I think Kirk Cousins, when he joined the team, said it was like throwing to a mattress. So, which is that's pretty nice. Nice compliment. And so, you know, you throw a fade in the corner to Kyle with the season on the line, there's a pretty good chance it's going to be successful going up against a cornerback, PJ Williams. And he made, you know, this incredible, beautiful catch, and that ended the game. But because of this rule, they could review that play, and now everybody looked at it and said, well, maybe Kyle pushed off, maybe it's offensive pass interference. And the Saints, again, you know, this time they could have benefited from the rule change. Given all that context, Kyle, just take me through catching that ball and any potential stress that they might overturn.
Well, so I never really thought about it. You know, we're, as happens on almost every play in the NFL, there's contact. He grabbed me. I'm getting his hands off me. We're going back and forth. And then I just, you know, literally I just waited for the ball to come as I knew his back was to the ball. I have a bit of a height advantage. It turned into, you know, basketball for me as a former high school basketball player. You see the ball in the air and it's like, just go up and get the rebound. So catch the ball, touchdown, game over. All my teammates come running on the field and, you know, not immediately, but as it kind of played out, you know, I thought to myself, like, oh, wait a minute. Like, it's a scoring play, so it's automatically reviewed. There's no challenges in overtime. So it's a scoring play. They're going to review it. And then I was like, damn, we're in the place for the reason that this rule was created. If they're ever going to overturn this and kind of justify as to why they made this rule come to be, now would be the time. And so, you know, for a little while there was some nerves, will it be overturned? You know, I think back to like week two, we had a scoring play in Green Bay and all of a sudden it's reviewed. And then the ref comes out and says, you know, the previous play is under review. And we're like, what are you reviewing? And, you know, it was just a simple touchdown to Diggs and no one was around him. Well, Dalvin had run into a linebacker on the opposite side of the field and they saw it on the replay and called offensive pass interference on Dalvin. And he had absolutely nothing to do with the play. So like in my mind, I had that and I'm like, oh God, like just please. Yeah. And then I remember come out, called the play good, touchdown stands. And obviously for the last 6 months, I've been asked if I pushed off. And I always explain to people, I'm like, if I pushed off just a bit, you know, the tiniest amount whatsoever, you don't think that they were going to call it in that situation, in that stadium, for the team who got screwed the year before because it wasn't a reviewable play. Like, they just – it had to be as clean as it could be to stand.
Yeah, I mean, and by the way, I don't care if you pushed off because my personal belief is that we should not be going back and finding penalties on replay that weren't called in real time. So if a flag wasn't thrown, I actually don't care if you did push off, but I would agree with you. I mean, there's contact, you know, I mean, that's, you know, there's contact on all these plays. But so how did it feel then? I mean, is that the biggest moment of your sports career?
I would say so. And the reason why, in my opinion, it was probably one of the best moments in my sports career, you know, immediately following the game, you know, celebrating with my teammates on the field. I'll never forget Brian O'Neill, you know, full sprint to me in the corner of the end zone and, you know, leaves his feet at 310 pounds and I have to catch him. So then once I stayed up, you know, then it was kind of the mosh pit of teammates in the corner. And then, you know, things settled down, you know, kind of do the post game thing. You know, so many of my former teammates are on the Saints and Teddy Bridgewater, Latavius Murray, guys that I have the utmost respect for and couldn't wait to see after the game. And that's, you know, that's your opportunity to get to talk to guys. So then, you know, you see all those guys, you talk to those guys. Then you make your way to the locker room and, you know, kind of going through that little hallway before you get in the locker room of the visiting team in the Superdome. You know, it was Rick Spielman, Rob Brzezinski, the entire Wilf family, Kevin Stefanski, Koobs, just everybody standing there kind of greeting you as you go in, and just the emotion that came over me seeing everybody's face and knowing the hard work that everyone in our organization put in that week, because, you know, we knew facing Drew Brees and Sean Payton in the Superdome, you're going to have to play near perfect to win. And no one outside of our team, our coaches, our staff, our fans really gave us a chance, and rightfully so. You're going to play in a really, really tough atmosphere on the road in the playoffs where not many teams have gone in and won. So, you know, that moment to me was what made it so special, just you know, celebrating with my teammates in the locker room, you know, the sheer joy and excitement that was on everybody's face. It took offense, defense, special teams. Everybody played well in order to get that win.
But that's not even the craziest thing that happened with that game. Tell us about the gloves.
Yeah. So then once things calmed down in the locker room, I was grabbed by our wonderful PR staff and Tom West, Bob Hagen, Sam Newton, and they said, we'll go out in the hallway because the locker room in the Superdome is not huge. So we'll do kind of the press conference scrum out in the hallway. So I go out in the hallway, talk to the media, 10, 15 minutes, whatever it was. Then I came back and I sat down in front of my locker and really just decompressed. I mean, I was just, there was so much excitement, so much joy. You know, I was just exhausted, you know, not to mention we played four quarters and 6 minutes of overtime either. So I sit down in my chair and I remember just kind of like staring blankly into my locker, absolutely exhausted. And so then I start getting my stuff around, and one of the, who I thought media members came up to me and asked me if he could have my gloves. And I didn't hesitate. And I said, absolutely. Would you like me to sign them for you? So then I offered to sign them and signed them and gave them to him and didn't think anything of it. You know, a lot of people in the media, you know, Mike, I'm sure you would say the same thing. Like, you would never ask a player for gloves or anything in a locker room. But to me, like, I never thought anything of it. And if anyone ever did ask me for something in the locker room, I would probably give it to you. And especially when you tell me it's for charity, like this guy did. So I didn't think anything of it, signed the gloves, gave them to him. And it wasn't, you know, until a couple days later that I saw a notification on Twitter from a Vikings fan who said, hey, are these really your gloves from the game? And they were on eBay, and it was like $395, and you could – it wasn't even a bid. It was buy it now for $395. He's like, that just seems way too cheap if these are really your game-worn gloves that you just caught the game-winning touchdown in. And so that was when it was brought to my attention. And, you know, like I said, a lot of people were like, oh, man, that was wrong. Like, it's such a shame, you know, yada, yada, yada. And, you know, to be quite honest, I was just disappointed that he only sold them for $395. I feel like he could have got way more than that. But in the end, we were able to turn, you know, something that was kind of crazy into a really cool thing. The guy who bought the gloves on eBay, he actually bought them, and the guy shipped them to him. So he got them. He sent them to the Masonic Children's Hospital that we do a lot of work here with. I sent him my game gloves from the 49ers game the following week, and he was able to raise $25,000 for the hospital, and he sent that along with the gloves.
Yeah. Well, that's cool. That's a happy
thing. Yeah, so all is well, ends well, and the crazy glove gate ended in a good way.
Dad, I feel like you wouldn't do that, but, I mean, Kyle, I wouldn't be surprised if you ever – got the Mike Silver warning speech, like, hey, watch out for this guy. He likes to go out with the players and get them hammered, praying for Chris Foley.
I'm pretty sure Tom or Bob has probably said that to somebody at some point.
I think they trust my judgment. They know that we have good times at the Super Bowl.
I came out to do a Randy Moss cover story for Sports Illustrated, and it was like, it was in the spring, and it wasn't really set up great. And they told me, hey, you can get them after minicamp practice. And I start walking with him back to the locker room at the old Winter Park locker room. And he goes, you got three questions, homie. Make it 2.5. I'm like, I got to write a cover story on Randy. And I go, well, I better not ask shitty questions then. And then he kind of liked me. So we wrote
That's awesome.
Unreal. That's okay. So you know, we're talking about this, the weirdness of this season, and, you know, there may be no fans, there may be some fans, obviously it's an evolving situation, but I saw a quote from Raiders owner Mark Davis. He's like, if they don't let all the fans in, I'm not going. If all of our fans can't go. So that's, you know, most people would say it would be great if we could have fans. But your quarterback, Kirk Cousins, said it would be, quote, a breath of fresh air to have no fans and just have the game stripped down. And the reason I bring this up is because my son, Greg, Natalie's younger brother, just started a podcast, by the way, called Potty Train Me. Potty Train Me, available on all major platforms. But Greg had to give an opinion, and he kind of roasted Kirk for saying he would prefer not having fans at the game. Just wondering if you want to take up for your guy.
Yeah, and I mean, obviously there's the easy angle of then going, oh yeah, because then there wouldn't be pressure, yada, yada, yada. But there's still millions of people watching on television. Yeah. And everyone's still going to see what happens. I think Kirk's angle was just, you know, it'll kind of take you back to your roots when you played the game in front of mom, dad, aunt, and uncle, you know, for 1,500 to 2,000 people in high school. And then, you know, for us, we've kind of just become numb to these incredible atmospheres and giant crowds, that it would be a breath of fresh air, to quote Kirk, you know, going back to just the simplicity of football and playing in front of a much smaller crowd, you know, maybe just family and friends. So I think that's more the angle that he was going with, because, you know, Kirk signed another new deal this offseason. He's making a lot of money. The pressure is certainly going to be there, whether there are people in the crowd or not. Everyone's right. Still going to be watching, you know, every game closely. And, you know, quarterbacks in this league, they get way too much credit when we win, and they get way too much blame when we lose. And that's just the nature of the position. There's a reason why the quarterbacks are all the highest paid players in our league.
Right, and Kirk, for some reason, gets more blame. I mean, like, you know, the playoff game in New Orleans, he played out of his mind, had a great, you know, most of his season last year. But because of the contract, maybe people do magnify his perceived flaws a lot, I think.
Yeah, and that, like I said, you know, the quarterbacks in general seem to get way more blame than they deserve. And, you know, we all know that that couldn't be more true for anyone other than Kirk. And, you know, last year, some of our biggest games on the road in Dallas, on the road in Seattle, primetime games on the road in New Orleans, Kirk played absolutely phenomenal. And Kirk had a great year last year, had the opportunity to go down to the Pro Bowl for the second time. And football is the ultimate team game. And I don't care how much money you make or what position you play, you have 10 other guys on the field that have to help you win. And Kirk played very, very well the entire year. Yet when some of us didn't play as well as we should and we didn't win games, the blame goes on him. You know, the whole Monday Night Football thing, you can't win on the road in primetime, all these things come up and come up and come up. And it's just not fair, because there's so much other stuff that goes into it than just one person.
If there are no fans and they don't pump in crowd noise, which teammate and or opponent's trash talk, if we can hear it, are we going to be blown away by? Well, like, what can we look forward to?
I feel like we immediately have to get Everson Griffin back in the league. Like, I know Ev's not on a team right now. He will be when the season rolls around. He's just too talented. But he's a guy that's probably the most entertaining human being I've ever been around, especially on the field. And most of the time, we're going against each other. And there's no one that I have more fun practicing against every day than Ev, because of that. I mean, he just brings so much energy. You know, he's always having a good time out at practice. And, you know, just a couple times he's been mic'd up. And I go back to the 49ers game a couple years ago. Obviously, the Minneapolis Miracle. When Ev's had a mic on, he's always entertaining. So if there's no crowd noise and no fans and you get to hear him throughout the course of the game, that would be very entertaining.
And what's his vibe? Is he telling you what he's going to do to you? Like, what's his approach?
Yeah, a little bit of both. You know, kind of that. I remember, like I said, I bring up the 49ers game a couple years, and we opened the season in 18 against the 49ers. And he was just talking so much trash to Garoppolo the whole time about just, yeah, I'm going to hit you again. And he just, like I said, he's always upbeat, like always super intense. And he'd be a lot of fun to hear without fans and crowd noise. But I certainly hope they have crowd noise, because to me, it would just be too weird playing in a, you know, football is a game where adrenaline and emotion kind of take over, and you put your body through things that you wouldn't normally do. And it will be weird doing that with, like, just this, you know, church-like environment.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely a weird season, or it's going to be. So along with COVID, another thing that's happened this offseason is a lot of reckoning about racial injustices. And you guys are at the epicenter in Minnesota where George Floyd was murdered. And I know in the past you've been on the Social Justice Committee of the Vikings. And I've read that the Vikings as a team had some really heavy and emotional Zoom conversations following the event. So we just wanted to ask, like, how the team environment has changed, or what conversations have been taking place, and how you guys are handling that as a team.
Well, it's one of the things that I love so much about our organization. And obviously we are here at the epicenter of everything that happened a couple months ago. We feel like we can be an example to not only our community, but to the rest of the country. And I bring up all the time that, you know, sports can be such a microcosm for what society should be like. You have people coming from all walks of life, all different backgrounds, who are working for a common goal. And we set our differences aside. And, you know, like I said, you have guys coming from all over the country, all walks of life. Yet we always set our differences aside to work towards a common goal. And with that, you know, in terms of the leadership committee, that social justice committee, you know, that's something that we've been doing for 3 years. And, you know, yes, this has come to the forefront of culture today, but it's not something that all of a sudden, because that happened here in Minneapolis, now we feel the need to react. This is something that our owners have dedicated an incredible amount of funds to, and they've supported all along. You know, a lot of people don't know that our owners family are Holocaust survivors, and they know the ultimate oppression. So they were very integral in leading us and showing us how we can make a difference in this community. And then, you know, we had about 10 to 12 guys from the team who got together with Coach Zimmer and Coach Andre Patterson, Rick Spielman, Lester Bagley. And, you know, we just decided, you know, how can we take these resources that our owners are providing for us and impact the community, impact the youth, impact the police department? You know, how do we bridge this gap that's been created for years and years and years? So it's another reason why I'm extremely proud to be a Minnesota Viking. And, you know, I've been fortunate to be here in one place for 10 years and got to know a lot of people in this organization really well. And, you know, I feel like we will be an example of change and can make change in this community.
Yeah, that's awesome. I actually got to, later they did a Zoom call and let some media people on. I actually got to be part of that. That was pretty cool. There, you know, I can imagine that when it was you guys privately, it must have been extremely heavy. Last year, you guys got off to a little bit of a slow start, especially offensively. And Adam Thielen, who we mentioned earlier, great receiver, and then another great receiver, Stephon Diggs, who has since been traded to the Bills, kind of conspicuously made it clear that they thought, hey, maybe we should try to actually throw a forward pass once in a while, since, you know, running is cool, but we also can move the ball that way. And what was amazing to me is, because we would always talk about it on the Aftermath on Monday, I was like, they were right. I mean, as soon as the offense opened up a little, and it's not that simple, but it really, you know, the team did great. The offense got better, and those guys made an impact. I also know from experience, like back to when I covered the 49ers early in my career, you know, Jerry Rice would kind of conspicuously ask for the ball. Ricky Waters, John Taylor, who didn't talk to the media, but made it real known that he wanted the ball as the best number two receiver in the league. But then you had Brent Jones, the tight end, who was this great guy, super polite and friendly. But behind the scenes, Brent Jones might have been the worst of all of them. He was like, get me the ball. I'm Brent Jones. So I'm wondering if you have any, like, Brent Jones tendencies. And, like, behind the scenes, you were also, like, letting it be known that it would be cool to open it up a little bit.
You know, I promise you there was no one last year that wanted the ball more than I did. it's the nature of being a skill player on offense. You want the ball in your hands. You want your number called. You want to make plays to help your team win. And that's just the competitiveness of those guys that you mentioned. And but for me, I can impact the game in a different way. And it's something that I've had to learn throughout my career. It's something that Coach Zimmer has, you know, beat over my head for the last 7 years that we've been together, that, you know, running routes and catching balls aren't the only ways that I can impact the game. And, you know, I joked before about my role as blocking and running routes, and it was mostly blocking last year. And, you know, to me, I just really had to change my mindset, and I took a lot of pride in going out and blocking guys who are far superior athletes than I am and significantly stronger than I am. But that's what I was asked to do. That was my role, to help our offense move the ball and score points. And it was almost like, as a competitor, I knew that the blocking aspect of my game was – what people would criticize to that point in my career. So I took a lot of pride in the fact that, you know, week one going up against rushers from Atlanta, like Vic Beasley, week two going to Green Bay and playing the Smith brothers and those guys, week three we're in Chicago and it's, you know, Khalil. So just the list of unbelievable outside linebackers, defensive ends that I'm going against week in and week out. And it's like, you go back and you watch the tape and it's like, wow, Kyle's guy didn't make any tackles. Kyle's guy didn't put any pressure on quarterback. Kyle's guy didn't have any sacks. It was just, like I said, I took great pride in the fact that when we turned that film on, you couldn't put the laser on me and say, well, if Kyle would have done this, was it something that I loved doing? No. Like I said, no one wants to be out running routes and catching balls more than I did, but I took great pride in this is how I can help our offense. And it's something that people think I don't do very well. So I'm going to go out and show that I can do it.
Do we think it was the most impressive blocking display by an Elder High Cincinnati graduate since Eric Wood?
Yeah, I you can't even put my blocking in the category with Eric Wood. That's just – although Eric, as a junior in high school, was the blocking tight end. So Eric has a little – right? He has a little tight end in his background. But I would
– Did you go to those games?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, of course. You know, Eric and I, we went to the same elementary school. We never played together because he was a little older. But so I watched him play after our games in elementary school and then watched him play both football and basketball at Elder.
So I'm trying to get a visual here. Like, so when you saw Bad Santa for the first time, were you – I mean, did it all just click in?
Absolutely. That was – although Eric, like – that was Eric as like an adult, you know, junior in high school. Eric Wood was probably 215 pounds, like super skinny.
Wow.
So you would imagine that the character from Bad Santa and Thurman Merman that looks like a baby Eric Wood was Eric when he was a child, but he was actually super skinny. And now he's lost a ton of weight again. But yeah, that's spot on.
It is amazing how much Thurman Merman looks like adult Eric Wood.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, it's like I said, you would just assume that as a child that was him.
That's amazing.
Kyle, we're gonna let you go, but I have one more question. Yes, absolutely. For you. So you know, the 2017 song "Truth Hurts" by Lizzo.
Yeah.
Who is she talking about?
So,
new man on the Minnesota Vikings.
After years of research, digging around, you know, my wife being one that was always like, okay, so who was it? Like, I've come to the conclusion that it was just a lyric that worked. Yes, she has her connections here to Minnesota, but it was just a catchy lyric because I can't find who this person is. I had plenty of leads.
Thank you for
I had plenty of leads, and I was just always, you know, I felt like a poor investigator, just always coming up on dead ends. So I am concluding that it was just a catchy lyric that fit, and I'm going with that.
Well, I'm going to at least salvage this. First of all, Natalie's super triggered by Lizzo because she's done a lot of music writing in college and since she got out of Cal. And she told me about Lizzo in like 2015.
No, I mean, she wasn't even.
She feels like she discovered her. And so now that the whole world knows about her, it just, you know, sets her off like, no, I've discovered Lizzo. So. But I will say this. So back in the heyday of the Greatest Show on Turf, Nelly used to hang out a lot in St. Louis with Marshall Faulk and a bunch of the star players. So I was around a lot and actually met Nelly once. Different story. But it came to my attention that the lyric in Hot in Here, where he says, "Got a friend with a pole in the basement," was the friend was... then Bengals receiver Darnay Scott,
who remember the name?
I guess maybe he had some St. Louis time. Maybe he's from St. Louis, I think. But Darnay Scott, who was a pretty good NFL receiver, was in fact the friend with the pole in the basement. Had a stripper pole in the basement, which sounds wholesome. I mean, I've never been able to pull that off in my house. I'm guessing Kyle does not have one in his house.
No.
Okay, so do you think if Lizzo did get a man now on the Minnesota Vikings, are there some suspects who you'd be like, okay, it would probably be one of these guys?
You know, three out of my five guesses are now gone. I immediately went to Diggs. That's like your just like – public enemy number one. He's always the one that you go to. And then, again, my wife, she was very into this as well, like Natalie, trying to help me crack this case. And there was an article when we played in Detroit that this new man on the Minnesota Vikings had ties to Detroit, and he was from Detroit. So, you know, now I'm going through our list here. I'm like, well, clearly it's not Kirk. So Kirk is a Western Michigan guy. So that left us with Tyler Conklin, who's tight end in our room, and Eric Wilson, a linebacker. So I obviously go to Tyler Conklin first, and I send Tyler the link, and I'm like, "So do you have something to tell me?" And he was like, "Rudy, get out of here with that. Like, I'm not even entertaining that." So, okay, Tyler's off the case. And so it's like, oh, how about Eric? And same thing, Eric Wilson was not the new man on the Minnesota Vikings. So I've struck out every time, and I just keep running into dead end. So I'm going with the catchy lyric line.
Okay, well, I will never ask you for your gloves, signed or otherwise. But I might ask you to have Jordan keep pursuing this and stay in touch with Natalie on this, because if it ever gets cracked, we got to get on.
I will be on it. I'm not going to actively pursue it as hard as I did a couple years ago. But if this case ever reopens and we got some new leads, I'll let you know.
What if the only fan in the stands this year is Lizzo?
I mean, be a good fan to have.
Then, I'm going to have to find out who's got all the field passes, who's the one smoothing the PR guys to get people in the stands.
It's unbelievable. Well, dude, you have exceeded our prescribed time limit by being awesome, so I owe you. Not as much as the guy who stole the gloves from you. Not as much as he owes you, but I owe you, and I will see you out there very soon in a very strange environment.
But yeah, Mike, so good to catch up with you. Natalie, it was great to meet you.
Nice to meet you. Thanks, Kyle.
You bet, guys. Appreciate it. Have a good one.